This week, the Clarets twice came from behind to claim points against the champions and a team with Champions League ambitions. This is the No Nay Never podcast. Hello and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. I'm Richard Steele, sitting in for Natalie, who is hard at work again. But I'm delighted to say I'm joined by regular panellists Tom Whittaker and George Poole. Firstly, I'm curious to see what mood both of the panellists are in. It seems like Europe's slipping away a little bit, but you can't really argue getting 2 points against two really high-quality opposition, especially with injuries to our team. Moving on to the two games we've got to look at, we'll start with Liverpool on Saturday. Fantastic point for the Clarets, first team to take any points against Liverpool at Anfield this season, in a really determined performance from Burnley. Tom, I'll come to you first. Going back to our last away game against real high quality opposition against City, do you think there was a lot of improvement in the Liverpool game?
Just one look at the scoreline should tell you there was definitely. It's a funny one with Liverpool, because obviously they're a bit of a machine, and they've tended to give us a good going over at the turf when we played them. But I always feel like we can get at them a lot more than we can City. I mean, City always seems to be 4-5-0. We never lay a glove on them. But Liverpool, we always nick a goal. I think we've gone in front like the last three times at Anfield before this game. So I was always slightly hopeful we'd be able to put up a bit more of a showing than we did against City. And I think the other thing is it's a good time to play them. Obviously, they've already won the league. They've got nothing to play for now. Playing a couple of kids. I mean, they both played well, but I think maybe that sort of 2-3% drop off was there for Liverpool. You could see it. And that contributed as well. But yeah, we certainly stood up well, defended well. And I think we had a bit more ambition than we did in the City game, whether that's because we sensed Liverpool a bit more there for the take-in, maybe because we've ridden our luck a little bit in the first half and kept the score down. But yeah, definitely a much improved performance.
Yeah, spot on. So obviously the City game was tough. The squad was decimated. We were disappointed with contract situations. First game after restart to, from where we are now, we're playing with so much more confidence. Our shape's looking much, much better. When we're really playing with more quality now. Moving on to Nick Pope, he's been absolutely fantastic this season. I think since we've come back from lockdown, he's gone up another level with his form. And some of the saves he made on Saturday were absolutely superb. He made 3 world-class saves in particular to deny Salah twice and then Mane. George, just sum up that performance for us.
It was superb, wasn't it? And it really stood out a lot. In the mainstream media as well. I was happy to see on Match of the Day Gary Lineker, and I can't remember the other pundits were on, but they were full of praise for Nick Pope. I mean, the one where he stayed from Salah, where I think it was to the top left of the goal, and you just got a fingertip on it and poured it away. I mean, it was absolutely superb. I think he's well up there in the conversation with England's number one, obviously. And what stood out to me over the weekend was that they had Crouch on BBC, and he effectively said that Nick Pope was the best keeper he'd ever played with in training. He said he turned round as though he'd probably got a goal, and he'd turn round again and it wouldn't be in the back of the net. And thinking of all the amazing keepers that Crouch will have played with, I mean, that's some high praise indeed. I think his game, even though he'd played well throughout the course of the season, it just seems to have gone up another notch since the project restart. And I think hopefully if he can get that golden glove, it'll be well up there in conversation for England's number one. And I think the better news is I can't see any of the big clubs needing a keeper. So hopefully he'll be our number one for years to come as well.
Yeah, it seems, like as you mentioned there, George, he's just gone up another level. The save you alluded to against Salah, where he seemed to claw it out of the net, was absolutely superb. Really strong hand to it. And you just feel so secure with him in the goal. George, I'll stick with you. And we mentioned it last week. England's playing friendly, which has just been announced, against Wales in October. Do you think he should be given a chance in that game?
You'd hope so, wouldn't you? Especially after I think he started the last game. The last game England played, was it earlier this year? It might have been last year at this point. But I remember he started that game. You've got to think, if Southgate comes out and starts Pickford after all his bad form this season, then you've got your answer. Pickford's England's number one, and that's that. Because to be honest, there's not much more he can do to give up that spot. I mean, he made another mistake at the weekend, didn't he? So it'll be interesting to see if he gives maybe. I don't know if we've got two games. Have England got two games, or is it just the one?
I think it's just the one against Wales that has been announced, unless they do announce any more.
It'll be interesting to see whether he maybe gives Pope and Henderson half each, or if he just gives Henderson a go. I think you'll get your answer, because it'll only be, another less than 12 months to the Euros when they play Wales. So I think you'll get your answer, whether it's Pickford starting and that's the number one, or whether he gives Henderson or Pope a go. I mean, for us, let's hope it's Pope.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be fantastic to see him start for England and get a really good run in the side. And amazing to see a Burnley player, start for England at a major tournament. So moving on to the second half, we really started to get into the game more. I thought the drinks break really helped us. I think after that, we really started to get into the game. We'll talk about the drinks break later. But in quite typical Burnley style, we got a free kick. A ball pumped into the box. Tarkey with that header. Players were queuing up at the edge of the box. But it landed to Jay. What a strike. How good a strike was that, considering it was dropping behind him, Tom?
Yeah, he made it look a lot easier than it was, I think. I think that's the player you want that to go to, because I think Rodriguez has got much more of a propensity for taking the shot on than any of our other strikers. I mean, Wood's a sort of penalty box centre forward. You don't see him outside the box very much, let alone shooting from outside the box.
Yeah,
Barnes has got one in him, but Rodriguez, he's the kind of player who will take on a shot that you're just not expecting him to. And sometimes it's the wrong decision, but thinking of the goal he scored against Chelsea this season, none of our other players are scoring that goal. And that was a similar one, I think. Wood probably wants another touch or two there, but just instinctive, a swivel, caught it so cleanly. No chance for the keeper. Yeah, fantastic technique, great goal.
Yeah, so obviously Jay's playing really well. He's been superb since lockdown. Wood come back into the team. He got 60 minutes against Liverpool, played a full 90 last night. Do you think that those two are our best strike partnership, Tom?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because Barnes was playing really, really well at the start of the season, and he ended last season really well as well. And obviously tailed off quite a lot in the middle of the season, but a lot of that was with him carrying an injury.
Yeah,
I think you'd have to say, to be fair, Rodriguez has done enough to earn the shirt. He's chipping in with goals consistently, and he offers us a bit of something different, definitely a bit more mobile than Barnes, I think, and probably better technically as well. So, yeah, I think you'd have to say, if we're starting next season with all four strikers fit, you'd start with Wood and Rodriguez. I certainly would.
Yeah, fully agree with that. I think since Rodriguez has come into the team and really started playing well, I think we've looked a better side. And as Tom alluded to there, he's just got that bit better technical ability than Barnes. So for me, they are the starting strike partnership moving forward, all being well with injuries. And then late on into the game, you can't get too greedy. It was a fantastic point against Liverpool. Corner's come in, it's dropped to Gudmundsson. Open goal, he's hit the bar. I was gutted. I thought, oh no, we could have got a win at Anfield. George, was you as disappointed as me, or just happy to get that point?
Look, we're all happy to get the point, but that doesn't mean we're not disappointed. I thought we were in dreamland there. I mean, firstly, a brilliant corner from Westwood, which created the confusion to begin with. It's so good to have him taking the corners from that side and McNeil from the other side. I mean, we're a threat against any team with them corners, and it's really an entertaining one to see, because if even against the bigger teams, we might not get forward much, but whenever there's a set piece, we're in with a chance. But yeah, the ball gets recycled and it just falls to Gudmundsson. And it just reminded me of, was it the Arfield goal away at Rovers? It just reminded me the way it just fell for him and he hits it, and then you think it's going in top bins as well, and then, oh, it hits the crossbar. Disappointing one, obviously, but you can't get too greedy. I thought we were well worth the point, and maybe three might have been a bit cheeky, and you never know, it might have upset them to get an equaliser at the other end. So we'll take the point, but what a good strike from Gudmundsson. Unlucky to see it hit the crossbar.
Oh yeah, I still think about it now. I kept saying to my dad when I'm watching it, how's he missed that? It's an open goal, but yeah, you can't complain about a point. And you just mentioned there, George, about Liverpool being upset. it was circulating on social media after the game that Andy Robertson was giving a bit of a volley to the officials, which to me seemed really unjustified. Again, you maybe go to a sport like rugby, that it would have been sent off for that. So what's your take on that incident, George? Was it completely out of order, or did Robertson have a point considering the penalty incident?
To be honest, I think in modern football, you come to expect that sort of behaviour from them towards the referees. The way the managers talk to them as well, there's a complete lack of respect. And I think it's something that it's whether the governing body wants to do something about it. Because if they laid down the law and said, right, from next season, we're not taking any of this anymore, we're going to be having bookings, sendings off for these sort of incidents, you know, you could really start to see the game be turned around in terms of the respect shown towards referees. I mean, you mentioned rugby union there, and the respect to the referees is so good that they can have microphones on the referees, and it enhances the viewing at home tenfold. I mean, you get to hear what the players are saying. And I know some people are saying, well, you know, you might have the swearing, but I think what we've seen since Project Restart with the games with empty stadiums, I know the commentators have made note of this, of what little bad language there has been, and the players have definitely improved on that, you know, knowing that they're live on TV and you might be able to hear it. So I think it's something that if they did want to sort out, they really could do. And I think using the potential swearing as an excuse, it's just a bit, it's weak for me. And I think they need to sort of, for lack of another word, to grow a pair and to actually just lay down the law and say, no, look, from next season, this isn't going to be acceptable. And then hopefully you could get to a point where we could have microphones on the referees, because when I watch rugby union, it's definitely a brilliant watch when you hear, you know, the players and what they're saying to the referee and why he's made such a decision. So I think Robertson was out of order, but it's to be expected in the modern game unless they do something about it.
I'd love to see that, George. Players, the refs getting mic'd up now. I'd love to see Sean Dyche give John Moss a bit of a volley too. I think that'd be absolutely brilliant, wouldn't it? But yeah, it's something that does grind on me a little bit. You always think that, you know, this is being broadcast, you know, to young kids and everything, and that's not in the spirit of the game, or it shouldn't be. But I suppose, and then Liverpool fans might argue that's what's made them a great team this year because they're such winners, etc. Okay, so moving to a point I mentioned earlier, we seem to really gain momentum after the drinks break in the second half. And it has seemed to almost be used as a tactical break. Now, I think Brentford's manager, Thomas Frank, actually had a big tactics board out with him the other week in a game. So, Tom, it's been banned for next season. Do you think that's a good thing that we're getting rid of the drinks break?
Yeah, I'd much rather get rid of it. It's too American for me. It's like turning the game into four quarters instead of two halves. You know, if carried on with it, they'd just start sticking some adverts in there. I can't see I know Dyche said, you know, it's one thing to have it if it's boiling hot 20 degrees, but, you know, it's like drizzle in some games and they're having a drinks break. It's pointless. I mean, have it if it's needed, and you could do that anytime. You know, you could just be flexible with it and say, you know, even if you're playing regular season in April or something and it's boiling hot, give them 2 minutes to have a drink, fine, but just mandating it every game, it's a pointless waste of time. I hope we don't see it again next season.
Yeah, it does feel very Americanized. And the next thing, knowing Sky, they'll maybe try and put, you know, adverts on it to make more money. So I'm a big fan of getting rid of it next season. Another thing I'm not a big fan of is the five subs. I just don't think there's any need for that amount of substitution again. Nine on a bench definitely favours the big clubs, especially, you know, like City. You look at the bench they've got. The IFAB have said that we can have five subs next season. But I think 14 out of 20 Premier League clubs have got a vote in favour for the rule to actually apply. George, can I get your thoughts on that, please?
It's one thing that's really worrying me. I mean, okay, having five subs this season after, you know, they've had that extended break and, you know, they've not had a proper pre-season to get back up to fitness. But from next season, it shouldn't be an issue. We really shouldn't be having five subs. I mean, without sounding, you know, like whining, it just isn't fair against the smaller clubs when you've got a team like City bringing on De Bruyne, they could bring on Aguero, Sterling, Mahrez, and we can bring on what, like Brady and Wood, and that's about it, you know, from our bench. I mean, free subs has worked for as long as football's been around. I don't see a need to change it. I've seen maybe an argument on the other side that it's helped youngsters like Foden and Greenwood at United get a game. But look, if those players are good enough, they'll manage to get some game time, and you can give them game time with free subs. I just think if it continues into next season, it could be a really unfair advantage, and you could see the big teams, you know, pulling away from the rest of the pack even more than they already have done. But I'm hopeful that I think a lot of the teams will vote against it. So we'll just have to see where that one goes.
Yeah, spot on with those views, George. Premier League, get rid of it. Simple as that. So to summarise that Liverpool game, it feels fantastic that the Claretts got a point there. I really kind of hope Liverpool win the remaining of the home games this season so that we can always say that we were the only team to take any points off Liverpool. Okay, so moving on to last night's match at Turf Moor, a very cold and windy Turf Moor, according to the BBC commentary team, who seemed to repeat that fact over and over again last night. I thought Wolves were excellent, really good to watch. They had Neves and Moutinho in the middle of midfield, who really controlled the game. So in the end, for me, a really good point, especially the injuries that we had. But in the first half, there wasn't that much to separate the sides. There were two chances. Hotter had a good one for Wolves. Rodriguez, one for Burnley. But it went to 0-0 at the break. Do you think any of them could have done better with those chances, Tom?
The Hotter one, I think Peters did well with that. He probably should be looking to put it across the goal. I don't think you're likely to beat Nick Pope at his near post from where he was. And I think Peters did well, to be fair, got across and narrowed the angle. Maybe if that had fell to him, and as he would have took it a bit sooner. But that was a difficult chance. I wasn't surprised to see that go past the post. The Rodriguez one, I thought, so it was the one where McNeil's put that ball across, and his first touch lets Cody get across to him and just sweep it out for a corner. I thought at the time that probably he couldn't do a lot more with it. I think it was just the fact that he had to take that touch in. The defender's always going to get there. They said in the commentary he could have took it a bit far wide, but then you lose your angle to have a shot for me. A few people, I was watching it with my family, and they all thought it was a bit of a bad touch. He could have kept it in his feet a little bit more, but for me, I don't think there was much on there. I don't think he could have done a lot more with that. So, yeah, for me, there were half chances, and the defender's always the favourite for both of them.
Yeah, typical dad's that, isn't it, Tom? Mine was the same. He thought, oh, that's an awful first touch. I'm like, well, you're not a professional footballer, are you, Dad? So I'll give Rodriguez the benefit of the doubt with that one, yeah, but agree. The Hotter one was definitely the better of the chances, and Burnley were happy to go in 0-0 at the break. It didn't help, George, that we lost Taylor for half an hour. Do you think we missed him throughout the game, or do you think Peters did okay coming in at left-back from his unfamiliar position of right wing?
As we've touched on already, I thought Peters did really well for the Hotter chance. I mean, just to cover him behind, I think it was Tarkowski. I think, you know, the Burnley team, we do that really well. You know, when a defender pushes up and another one covers him behind, and I think it really did make it into a half chance. I thought for the rest of the game, Peters looked solid. Obviously, we missed Taylor going forward, and I think that's one thing where, you know, for the first half an hour of the game, we've got an ex-Stoke City right-back in Bardsley and an ex-Stoke City left-back in Peters, and they were going down the right wing together. I mean, you're never going to create that many chances. And then sticking Peters on the left, you know, it's not too much of an attacking full-back option. But I think, you know, within the first couple of minutes of him moving on to that left-back position, Traore had a little bit of a run at him. He just, you know, from a standing start to what must be 35 miles an hour in this blink of a second. And he just glided past Peters with ease and chipped a ball into Jimenez. Luckily, Jimenez hit I think it was a header just straight at Pope. But yeah, at that point, I was thinking, bloody hell, you know, this is going to be a long old game with Traore just absolutely whizzing past Peters. But to be honest, whether it was the whole team in the second half, maybe just defending a bit better, we didn't see Traore get as much one-on-one time with our fullbacks. And that, other than a couple of bright moments, and I know it was Traore's run where he burst through for their goal. But apart from that, there was no sort of one-on-ones with Peters. And I think we as a team did well to negate that threat. And, you know, at no other point in the game did you see Peters really exposed. So yeah, I thought he was a dependable option in there, and I think, you know, it was a good summer signing from Dyche. He's proven himself well. Hopefully Taylor can come back though in the next couple of games, because, you know, he's been brilliant all season as well, and it'd be a shame to lose another injury. I mean, bloody hell, we've had enough of those, haven't we?
Yeah, I know, you kind of just see him going down like flies at the moment, just all right, and another one. Yeah, for me, Peters, I thought he did okay. I still think he looks better in midfield, which is quite strange considering he is a fullback. But that kind of summarised the first half. Moving into the second half, I thought we started quite brightly. We got on the front foot more so. But then, we obviously, Wolves started to get back into the game slowly, and then we conceded that goal. Great finish by Jimenez. But, you know, George mentioned Traore there. You know, he is difficult to stop when he gets going. He's so quick and so powerful. But for me, I felt we should have just volleyed him. You know, there was three players around him. We didn't take him down. Tom, was you frustrated with how we let Traore go through the midfield? Or do you just kind of go, it's really difficult to stop him, and it was a great strike by him, Jimenez. It's just one of those things.
Did my head in that.
Yeah, it did mine. And if I was trying to be polite.
So frustrating. It's like every opposition fan, you know, terms is like a bunch of cloggers and that. And it's like, I wish we bloody had a clogger in that midfield. It's exactly the same as the Son one, you know, when he scored that goal. Like,
oh, yeah. That was even worse, all that.
Yeah. Just waving through like Joey Barney against Man United a few years ago. It's like, commendable. And maybe he's just too quick for him or strong for him to actually bring him down if they try. But yeah, you've just got to trip him up and take the yellow there, haven't you? Because we haven't got anybody who's getting back to it. As it proved, you know, just outpaced everybody. Had a bit of luck, obviously, with the goal. The way the shot was absolutely terrible. And obviously, it set up. On Match of the Day, they were saying it was a difficult one. I think it did set up quite kindly for him, to be honest. But hell of a finish. But like, that was, sometimes, you know, you've just got to hold your hands up and say, fair play, that's just class. Fantastic goal. And the run was really good as well. Obviously, you don't want to advocate legging people up and fouling them, but I think that's all we could do in that situation. A bit too honourable and noble for our own goods there.
Yeah, you know, sometimes people say that, you know, we're very dirty. I'd say we're tough, but in situations like that, just volume and, you know, take a yellow and then get back in position. But as you mentioned, Tom, high-quality finish. I think Jimenez has been one of the best strikers in the league this season, and it really showed, you know, with that goal. Great technique, and, you know, we're talking about how good Pope's been this season. He had absolutely no chance with that strike. But in typical Claret's fashion, we wasn't at our best, but we never give up. George, when Wood missed that absolute sitter, I think I could have scored that one. Did you think it was game over then?
Oh, it was absolutely ridiculous, wasn't it? I mean, I watched the second half back today, and hearing it was Ben Mee and Phil Byrne on commentary. And once when Wood missed it, you could hear Ben Mee go, "What?" And
then he
was silent, because obviously you don't want to criticise your teammate, but bloody hell, what a miss that was. All he needed to do was just nod his head at it. I mean, there's no way you could even miss that, or seemingly there is. I thought that was over at that point. You know, that was the 91st minute, was it?
Yeah.
And then we had another attack in like the 93rd minute, and that broke down. And at that point, you're thinking, oh, the game's just going to dribble out here. You know, unfortunate loss. But, you know, we got the penalty, and what a penalty it was. I mean, I was talking to my dad today. I said, I don't know why players don't do it more often, just shoot in top corner. I mean, he said it might be harder than that. But I said the professional footballers should be able to do that. But it was a brilliant finish from Wood. And, I mean, he needed it, because he needed to make up for that miss. It always seems like Chris Wood that's missing sitters as well. I mean, I think he's our best striker, but he does miss a fair few of his sitters.
Yeah, I think the improvements of Wood in his, you know, he's always been a good goal scorer, but in his overall game this season has been superb. His hold-up play, running the channels. And I suppose that's why he scores so many goals, is, you know, you can put those chances behind you, you know, and then be as cool as that to step up and take the penalty. Like you said, George, you won't see many better penalties than that. I want to get both your opinions on this. Firstly, I will stick with you, George. It was, you know, there's a lot of contention over this. Some saying it was, some saying it isn't. Do you think it was a penalty?
I think it's one of them where, you, with VAR, you go with the referee's decision, because, look, He's not. I think we can all agree he's not putting his arms up as a deliberate handball. Like, he is trying to protect himself. And I know there's still images from behind the goal where it looks like Chris Wood's, you know, a mile away from him, and he is. But then you've got to take into account that, well, they're both moving players. Chris Wood's getting his legs up in the air. The defender's running towards Wood to head the ball out. You know, I don't blame him for putting his arms up like that. If you saw 6'4" or whatever he is, Chris Wood lumbering his legs up in the air. So yeah. I don't blame the guy. But I think with Mike Dean going with the decision to give a penalty, you know, it'd be a really tough one for VAR to overturn that. I'm really not sure on the rules, because I thought it had to be almost a deliberate handball, or is that in the build up to a goal?
I've got no idea what the rule is anymore. So
I think that paints the picture, doesn't it? Yeah.
Before I give my view on it, Tom, you're Georgia, great feedback. Tom, your view on the penalty?
Yeah, I don't think you can say it's not handball because of his arms are out, unnatural. I don't think he has to. You know, he's not, the boot's not actually that near his head when you look at it. I think if he'd been a bit braver there or just stood still, he'd have been all right. The query is whether Wood throwing his leg at that like that and getting nowhere near the ball, whether you class that as dangerous play. And to be honest, I wouldn't have been that unhappy if that had been deemed dangerous play and a free kick had gone against us.
Yeah.
But if you're not deeming dangerous play, then it's a handball for me. I don't think you can excuse him from the handball on the grounds that he's got a boot near his face. I think if you're a defender, you've got to be a bit braver there. Either if you're going to sort of move towards the ball, you've got to either have your eyes on it or maybe put a back or a shoulder to it, something where you're not going to get too much damage from the boot, but also you're not going to give away an handball. Either that or, like I say, stand still, gamble that he's going to miss it because you're not going to get in front of him, and then there's no issue. So I think we're a bit fortunate in that he's not gone straight for the easy decision, which was to give a free kick for dangerous play. But once you've done that, then it's a penalty for me, and I don't think there was any danger of it getting overturned when it got to that stage.
Yeah, you know, I'll great point, sir. I don't feel I need to add anything more to that. But well done, Mike Dean. Sticking with you, Tom, you went on a Wolves fan podcast after the game last night. How did they view the match, and were they disappointed with the draw?
Yeah, they saw the penalty incident slightly differently to what we did, as you might imagine. We had a good chat. I think we recorded it straight after the game, so I think the emotions were still quite high for them. Obviously, it was a bit more of a devastating result for them because it pretty much kills their hopes of getting the Champions League. There weren't too many bones of contention apart from the penalty. I think they got a bit melodramatic about it. I think probably if they watch the incident back again, they'll realise that Matt Doherty wasn't in serious danger, or even I've seen some of their fans tweeting that it could have potentially killed him. Blimey. I think the emotions were getting the better of him slightly, shall we say, but that's what being a football fan's about at the end of the day, isn't it? So yeah, it was interesting to get their view of us. I think it was probably you could have filled a line of cryos bingo with some of the opinions that were on there before I came on, but that's the way we like it, innit? It's one thing to get points off them. It's another thing to really ruin their day as well.
Yeah, spot on, Tom. It's interesting always to hear other fans' point of view on key decisions, and I think there's probably definitely bias to one side of or another with that penalty decision. So I think that summarises the Wolves game really well. Good point in the end, and it's really funny how karma comes around. It was almost identical at Molineux, which seems an absolute age ago. We played really well that game, scored a great goal in Barnes, and Wolves got a dubious penalty in the last minute and scored. And obviously last night game was the polar opposite of that. So yeah, 2-1-1 draws against Wolves this season, who are a fine side with some top players. So I don't think we can be too unhappy with that at all. So with City's ban being overturned, it's kind of looked inevitable. Means seventh place now is what we would need to finish to get in the Europa League. We've had two draws on a bounce, even though the good results, and with Arsenal, Spurs winning, Sheffield United's gone on a good run. It looks very, very difficult for us now to get into the Europa League. We did run a poll last week about whether for the fans to see if they would want us to qualify for Europe. And there was a 60-40 split in favour of getting into Europe. People who said no was mainly because of issues with squad, transfers, etc. George, does a European dream for the second time seem to have passed us by now?
I'll tell you what, before I answer that question, I'd like to say I wish there was a 60-40 split on the Europe vote in 2016 in favour of staying in Europe. but no, I take your point, and I think the European dream is over for next season. For now, I think Tottenham are seventh place, 4 points above us. I think all the teams would have to, you know, drop a lot of points in the last two games, and we'd have to win both. You know, it does seem highly unlikely, but I'd like to echo Tom's points from last week's podcast, where he was saying, I think for the people who did manage to go on the European trips, I managed to go to all three games a couple of years back. And I've got to say the same as Tom, you know, that's the stuff that you remember as a fan, the cup finals, the playoff win at Wembley. It's those trips that, you know, make it as a fan. It's not finishing 14th and staying up comfortably in the Prem, even though, you know, that is good and we take that for granted nowadays. But, you know, it would have been brilliant to finish 7th or 8th if the ban hadn't been overturned by, you know, City spending the money in illegal ways. But, you know, the less said on that, the better. You know, it's a shame we're not going to get it, but you can't really complain. We've lost one game in 14, which is just absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
Especially when you take into account the sort of teams we've played. Wolves, you know, they've been absolutely brilliant this season. Liverpool, I think, have we played Tottenham in that run as well? I saw a stat today. Since the start of the year, we're third in the form table, 27 points from 15 games. I think it probably, more than anything, it fills me with hope for next season, because if we can, you know, balance out our form over the course of the season, you know, who's to say we can't target a top eight finish? I know it might seem fanciful, is that the word? But anyway, we'd have thought that about a top 10 finish before the start of this season, and now look at us. So I think, you know, we'll have to see what happens next season.
Yeah, I think, you know, very fortunate, you know, Georgie, you got to go to all three games. I managed to go to Aberdeen away, which was amazing. Didn't quite have the funds at the time to make the other two trips. I was just praying that we would have got through to the group stage and got someone a little bit closer. But as you said there, you know, it really fills you with optimism going into next season. Obviously, the closed season, the transfer window situation with Dyche kind of, you know, leaves a little bit of uncertainty. But I really always do kind of, I say it every season, you want the club to keep progressing and getting better. You know, there's the saying, if you stand still, you go backwards. So hopefully, you know, Dyche will get a little bit of backing, and I say that with my fingers crossed. So going into the last two games of the season, we've got Norwich away on Saturday, who were pretty rubbish. And then we've got Brighton at home, the last game of the season. So Tom, in previous seasons, the Claverts have maybe gone on the beach a little bit, but there seems that won't happen with this Dyche team. So how do you think we'll do for the remainder of the games? Or firstly, going into Saturday's game?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because I have to say, I thought this whole lockdown period was going to be similar to you know, a Dyche end of season. I didn't think we'd approach it with the way we have done. You know, we've put so much into it.
No, it's been the complete opposite, hasn't it? It's been unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. The spirit is just unreal. And I did think we were starting to look a bit leggy in the Wolves game. I think Westwood looked out on his feet, especially. The passing has dropped off quite a lot. But then we're playing two of the worst teams in the league in the last couple of games. So I think a lot of it will depend on how bothered we are about, you know, trying to get as high up the table as we can. I think we're pretty much nailed on to finishing the top half now. Obviously, it's an extra 2-3 million quid for each place up you go, but that's not seemed to be a big consideration in the past. But maybe if Dyche is angling for more money, that's something that him and Garlick have spoken about, and maybe he said, well, you know, if you can get us 2-3 places up that table, then you've got an extra, you know, 6-8 million on your budget. So maybe that'll be a motivation. More dry powder. Yeah, there you go. I think the injury situation might be a consideration as well. You know, if Taylor is out. Who else went off? Rodriguez went off again, didn't he? Yeah. So if Taylor's injured and we're playing Peters, if Rodriguez is injured, I mean, we will literally have a first 11 and that's it, won't we, at that point? So maybe you'll think, do you know what? We're top half, we ain't getting in Europe. Maybe I'll play a few of the kids. So maybe that'll come into it as well, and that might affect the results. But on paper, yeah, we should have too much for Norwich and Brighton. So, yeah, no reason we can't still be looking up.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see some of the youth players again. It's, you know, everybody says, you know, throw these young lads in, but we don't really know how good they are. Obviously, when you play them at that level, it'd be nice to see Goodmanson get a start. I know his body's kind of been let him down recently, but I thought he looked really bright when he come on last night. And he's just a player I think's got tremendous quality and makes us a better team. So, Tom, I'll stick with you. What's your score prediction for Saturday against Norwich City?
It would be really embarrassing if we were the only team since the lockdown who hasn't beaten Norwich. So, yeah, I've got to go a comfortable 2-0.
Yeah. George, same question for you. Score prediction and goal scorers.
Yeah, I've got to agree with Tom there. I mean, Norwich, let's be honest, have been absolutely awful since the start of the season, we may as well say. So, yeah, I'm back enough to get a 2-0 win. I think you'd hope J-Rod, you know, I'm going to say J-Rod's going to be fit, you know, hopefully. Yeah. Like a precautionary thing to take him off. So I'd say Rodriguez and Brown. I'm going to back Brownhill to score. And hopefully, nice. We're on 51 points now. You know, the season we finished seventh, we finished on 54 points. This could be our record points total in the Premier League. And I'd probably put it out there, maybe a question to listeners. Is this the best team Dash has ever assembled? Because even with all the injury situations and the contract situations, we might end up with a record points total. And, you know, if we don't lose between now and the end of the season, one loss in 16, I think for me, this is the best Burnley team under Dash we've seen.
Yeah, you can't argue with that. I think the season we did come seventh, there was a lot of 1-0 wins, you know, a lot of hanging on. But this season, we've had some fantastic performances. And, you know, with, you know, West Ham, we battered them 3-0. Bournemouth at home, you know, some great away wins. So really can't argue with that. Coming to the end of the podcast, so No Name Ever fans, we're going to be running some alternative end of season awards for categories like worst miss, best anti-football moment, player of the project restart, etc. So please look out for the link to the polls on our social media channels next week. To summarise for me, just really proud being a Burnley fan at the moment, felt such pride. Getting that draw against Anfield, you know, and it's really nice to go into these last two games of the season, you know, not fighting relegation. And, you know, we've pretty much consolidated a top half finish. So, and as George was saying, you know, what a great team this is, full of effort, application and real quality. I just want to say thanks very much to our regular panellists, Tom Whittaker and George Poole. As always, thanks to our editor, Matt Moss, who does a great job in making the podcast look very shiny. But most of all, and most importantly, thank you to our listeners. This has been the No Name Ever podcast.